We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
50% righteousness.
Yo, Angela Yee, I love you.
50% ratchetness.
Tell them ratchets to sit down.
Okay, more like 95% ratchet.
This is becoming the most prominent form for hip-hop.
Wake your ass up.
Yeah, it's early in the morning, but they told me it was y'all. I said, oh, hell yeah, I'm getting up.
The world's most dangerous morning show. DJ Envy.
Your people's choice.
Angela Yee.
I'm a sweetheart, but I'll cut you.
Charlamagne the God.
Prince of pissing people off.
I can't believe you guys are the best, kid.
Collectively known as
Breakfast Club, bitches.
This is your time to get it off your chest, whether you're mad or blessed.
800-585-1051.
We want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
Hello, who's this?
Good morning, it's Xavier.
Xavier, good morning, get it off your chest, bro.
Actually, I just want to start off with some positivity. I want to shout out my sister and brother-in-law. They're actually starting their own business called Teacher Love Box. They actually called and got through to you guys about 2 weeks ago. Wanted to give it a shot again and let everybody know. Get on there and check it out. We want to just spread some love to the teachers.
Okay. Will do, my brother.
I always am a fan of spreading love to teachers, man. That is one of the most important jobs that's the most underpaid.
Yeah, my mother's a teacher, English teacher, South Carolina, man. Hey, 30 plus years.
Hey, so, man, if you want to get her a box, man, get one.
What? Give me the website again. That actually would be a good idea. What's the website again?
Teacher Love Box Official. And that's on Instagram, and then you can get right to the website.
I'm going to order one today, my brother. Teacher Love Box Official.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, Charlamagne, do you mind sending me one of your books? If you got any back in yet?
Well, I don't, but I'll send you a copy of Tamika Mallory's State of Emergency, How to Win in the Country We Built.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll try that one out. Some mental health help.
Can't we all, my brother? Can't we all?
Yeah.
All right.
Hold on, man.
Hold on,
bro.
Hold on so I can get your address.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hello, who's this?
Hi, this is Mel. This is DJ Envy.
This Mo?
Mel.
Mel, what up, man? Get it off your chest.
Good morning. No, good morning, Dr. Charlamagne. Good morning, Angela Yee.
He's King.
Long-time listener every day. Donkey of the Day is my stuff. But
thank you, brother.
I lived with a female for 9 years. And we've been together, we worked together for 9 years, but I live with her, and I sleep in the living room, and she sleeps in her room. And I wake her up every day at 4 o'clock in the morning just to use the bathroom, because she might, you know, pee in the bed.
What? So y'all roommates?
Yeah, we basically roommates, you could say that.
Y'all don't have sex or anything like that? No relationship?
No, sir.
Is this my dad?
Wow.
This is my dad.
What's the reason, though? Like, I mean, is it for financial reasons, though? So what's the reason y'all still roommates?
Because her twin daughters, I've been in their life since they were babies, so she don't want to be with nobody else. She wants to be with somebody else, but she doesn't want to bring another guy into the relationship.
It's comfortable for her.
That something might happen because
damn.
They have a special disability. They partially deaf.
Got it.
Got you. So she don't really want you. She just wants you around the kids. She'd rather see somebody else.
She feels comfortable with you.
Yes.
Okay.
And you. So what about if you want to date somebody else? Does she want to date somebody else?
That's the thing. She tells me, like, I'm going to go out and spend the night out. Or She gives me, like, basically say a curfew. If you're not home by 11:30, I already know you're spending the night out. So
how old are you,
I'm
sir?
I'm gonna be honest with you.
What happened, DJ?
How old are you, sir?
37.
Yeah, this sounds like the story you tell other women because you know you got a girl. So you'd be like, nah, I don't really got a girl, you know what I'm saying? But we just live together, you know, her kids got special needs. So I just take care of the kid, but we not really together. This sounds like the story you tell other women.
No, not really.
Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't call up here and lie to us.
Why not?
I'm not lying.
Yeah, no, I believe you. That's what I'm saying. It's an unusual arrangement, but people do get, like, comfortable with someone. They're scared to move on. I always say that some people get comfortable in being like in a dysfunctional relationship.
But he seems trapped though. Does this girl
say? Yeah, they,
like you can't see other people.
Right? No.
She
said, "I want to see other people. I don't want to be with you, but I just got you around because you go with the kids." Like he sounded like he.
No, she told him if he stays out till past 11:30, I know you're with somebody else, so don't come back. Like, what kind of sense is that? Come on now.
Well, Candace, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Get it off your chest, Mama.
I would like to say congratulate you for your 20-year anniversary. Congratulate Charlamagne for being a doctor, darling. And
thank you.
Angela, you are just amazing.
Thank you.
And it's nothing like finding your life partner, your best friend. I would like to also shout out my king. We don't got nothing on you and your wife for 20 years.
Not yet. You'll be there soon.
Just time. It's all time. They got on you is time. That's
right,
all.
Mama. Yeah. Wait. One more thing. I would like to, you know, just a reminder because I called last week and I appreciate y'all putting me on y'all platform. I also would like to say, so make sure y'all do y'all check-ins with y'all family and friends because we need people sometimes to check on us. Mm-hmm. And don't forget to follow me at My Peace, My Truth. And make sure that y'all buy, you know, your shirt so you can speak out against mental health.
Okay, thank you, Mama.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, hit us up now. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Let's go. This is your time to get it off your chest. Whether you're mad or blessed.
Say it with your chest.
We want to hear from you on The Breakfast Club.
So if you got something on your mind, let it out.
Hello, who's this?
Rob.
Hey, what's up, bro? Get it off your chest.
Yeah, just really having a hard time with relationship issues.
Oh, what's the matter?
What's your problem, bro?
It's both ways. Neither one of us has trust in each other.
Why don't y'all have trust? What did y'all do to destroy the trust?
Maybe I was working multiple jobs for one, I think, and a lot of friends and families and influences and stuff like that, you know?
That doesn't seem like a reason to dissolve trust.
We need a little more information than that. And we want you to be honest. Like, what is the real reason? There's reasons why people don't trust each other.
Well, she went searching to try to find something that she heard from a friend. Then she started doing searching and didn't find nothing. So I think that's kind of where the trust went, like about a year ago.
You're saying she tried to step out, but you didn't. But she was, because she felt guilty about what she was doing.
She thought I tried to step out and went doing some searching. And didn't find nothing. But I always had friends in the ear and, you know, telling her this and telling her that. Used to accuse me of cheating basically every day. You know, saying all this and that. You know, less of a man. You don't have this, you don't have that. It's a lot, you know. It's a lot of nitpicking. Okay. It is a child involved, you know. So that's my main focus. I'm like, we need to come together for our child.
Have you tried couples counseling?
We tried counseling. But when we talk to a neutral person that don't know anything about the relationship.
It's difficult, I'm sure.
And he was telling us, like, what we need to know. And, like, when you saying you don't have a problem, it really is a problem. And
she wasn't honest.
You know, yes. And, honestly, she, like, a couple months ago, she... If you have gave me a STD or anything, I'm leaving you. Like, well, why would you think that? You know, because I'm not doing anything. So,
do you not trust her?
Well, I did trust her until all these assumptions and want to hang out with, you know, friends all the time instead of, like, trying to build what's in the house.
Well, hold on. It seems like you need some more help from me. So you hold on, all right? Hello, who's this?
It's Jelly Belly from Boston.
Jelly Belly, good morning. Get it off your chest.
Jelly Belly.
First off, I want to thank your producer for being who he is because he gives me life every time. I love his energy.
is very therapeutic. On that note, I am a financial therapist, and I've been going within my family to, like, literally change their lives, and I've been shocking people that I didn't think I could shock. So I know it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and I focus on that aspect, a lot of it, with what I do, because it's the education that's important. I do thank you guys for being a platform that I could say this. So I would love you guys to follow me on Instagram. I'm trying to figure out my life on the social media platform. Mm-hmm. Janae's okay. Financial Therapy. You can follow me on Instagram. It's J-E-N-A-E. Everybody gets it wrong, including my father. So,
that's a shame. Yeah. Didn't they name you?
Right. I don't know if he was there. That makes me concerned. But I love you guys. I love you guys. And I always tell everybody to leave it love and greatness shall follow. My condolences to you, Envy. I did DM you like last week or 2 weeks ago, if you could check that. But
Janae, what's a financial therapist do?
Well, my mission is to ease the mind, ease the pain around finances, because a lot of the times Black men are being told to be the providers, and they feel like they don't have an outlet to go say, like, oh, I don't know how to do this, you know? Like, and they shun away from therapy. That's not something we talk about in our community a lot. So mm-hmm. putting them both together, we need to open up. We need to open up because there's ways that we can win, and it's not always just about not to shun you or whatever, Envy, but it's not just about real estate, because that's the most people like to do it. Well, I need to do real estate because that's going to bring me passive income, but there's other ways to do it. So just, you know, I want to ease that pain like any other therapist would do.
Okay. I love it.
And I'm licensed in many states, so it's sufficient. It's sufficient, and it's free information, so let's get it. You know what I mean?
That's right, what I'm talking about. You. Information be out there.
Absolutely. Get it off your chest. 800-585-1051. If you need to vent, hit us up now. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Hey, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee. Follow me and the guy. We are The Breakfast Club. We got some special guests joining us this morning.
That's right. One of them has been here a whole lot. Super friend to the room. Our guy, Mike Epps. Another is a legend who I'm mad. It's the first time we ever talking to her on Breakfast Club, and it's via damn Zoom.
That's right. Wanda Sykes, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, finally, I made it. I made it to the Breakfast Club.
You should have been here in person. That's what you should have been.
What did I have to do to get here? And like you said, it's Zoom.
When I saw you
with Mike Epps and get a show on Netflix as number one, and I finally make it to the Breakfast Club.
I saw you at Tiffany Haddish's 40th birthday party in December of 2019, and you said you was coming to Breakfast Club, and then here come COVID.
I know, right?
But, Wanda, no. if you would have caught a gun charge a long time ago, you'd have been on there.
Right, Mike.
We are celebrating good news, though, with the new show, The Upshaws. I like the good news because Paige Absolutely. Has been telling me about this show for quite a while because he was on the show. So he kept talking it up. And you know how somebody talks about something, you're like, all right, when is the show coming out already? But it's out. And so congratulations on how well it's doing on Netflix.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I thank y'all. Thank the fans. Thank y'all for watching, man. Like I was saying, y'all just not binging it. Y'all are devouring it. I mean,
that's like, amazing.
People are like watching it like two or three times. It's amazing.
Hey, let me ask y'all a question, man, before we get started, because, you know, we just did come out of a pandemic. I guess we still in it, but mm-hmm. how are y'all? And I want an honest answer.
I mean, I ain't gonna lie. I've been through a lot. You know what I mean? I lost both my parents Dang. In December. Yeah. And, you know, previous to that, we was all on home detention. We was locked down. Mm-hmm. So it been rough for me. But, you know, I got so much faith in God, I ain't going to let nothing stop me. I got to stay down. I'm doing what they wanted me to do. You know what I mean? And let's be good. Let's be successful and be happy. You know what I mean?
Hey, I'm sending you healing energy, Mike. Damn,
absolutely, brother.
Yeah. Mike has really, you know, been through it. And I think it was cool that we, you know, weren't just doing a show about a family. You know, I've known Mike for years, so it's like we're family, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we all, you know, was supporting him, keeping him lifted up. But he's a strong brother. He really is, and he has, and like you said, that faith in God, and it got us all through, you know. And I'm dealing with the kids and everything and all, but it's you know, we just feel blessed, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right. It's hard, and we, mm-hmm, we're not gonna sugarcoat it. I mean, a lot of people went through depression, you know. Mm-hmm. I had some issues, you know, dealing with it, because it was just, we've never experienced something like this, you know, like Mike saying, like home detention. And then when you see all these people losing their lives, I know so many friends who've lost people also. Right. And you feel blessed, but you also are like, just, it's just sad. You just feel sad. And then all the stuff we were going through with from George Floyd on and before, mm-hmm, that, you know, it was just, dang, it was just, feels like when, like the camel's about to break, man.
All right, when we come back, we have more with Wanda Sykes and Mike Epps. They're on the new Netflix series, The Upshores. Don't move. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know a spot, but not just a spot. The spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha Guy. We are The Breakfast Club. We're kicking it with Wanda Sykes and Mike Epps. Charlamagne?
So you an EP on this show too, right?
Yeah, EP and co-creator with Regina Hicks.
How is the approach different when you the EP and co-creator and you starring it? How is your approach to the role different?
Well, you know, I've been in this position before, so it was... you know, I'm in the writer's room and, you know, getting the scripts together and everything. And then when I'm on stage and performing, I try to, you know, I turn that other part off so we can, you know, so I can make the performance. But when I'm not in the scene, then I get back behind the monitors and, you know, and watch everything.
Mm.
But it was cool working with Mike because, you know, like encourage him to like, hey, man, if how would you say this if this doesn't sound right to you? Or, you know, Mike, you got a better joke for this? So it was just real cool, very collaborative.
Absolutely.
It looks like y'all probably had a lot of fun on set too, working together. Like that looked like a fun.
It was fun. It was fun showing up every morning with Wanda and Kim and Paige, and I mean, it was almost like summer school. You remember how fun summer school used to be?
No, I don't.
I do.
That was not fun.
I mean, you don't have to go all day, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just there for a couple hours.
I hated being there, but I get what you're saying. It was fun. I had to go for 7th grade, 8th grade, and 9th grade. 3 years in a row with my dumb ass.
Wow.
Summer school.
Well, thank you so much for checking in to Mike Epps. We appreciate you. Also, Mike Epps, I want to say thank you. You know, when the Breakfast Club first started, you were one of the comedians that came on and you rocked with us when a lot of people didn't. You remember, we just seen a skit that you did. I think it was like our first skit. You remember that skit? Were you not out the girl's hand?
Yeah.
Hey, not only that, Mike used to have me host his, I don't know if that was Easter Sunday. It was a show you used to do at the Garden every year for about 3-4 years. And Mike used to have me host it, man. I appreciate
that's
that.
That's a tough crowd. That's a tough crowd to host in front of when you're not a comedian.
Not for me. All I had to do was say, come into the stage. Y'all ready for Mike Epps? Make some noise.
That love for the Breakfast Club, man. Love, baby.
I'm just honored. I finally made it here, man.
No, you got to come to the studio, Wanda. We need you in the studio.
We are honored, and I would be so excited for you to come up in person.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We love y'all.
Love.
Love y'all.
The Breakfast Club. Your mornings will never be the same.
If summer is inspiring you to be a little bit healthier, Audible is a great help. Check it out for guided meditations, motivating podcasts, and audiobooks on fitness and nutrition. Get your first audiobook free when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audible.com/breakfastclub.
It's topic time.
Pick up the phone, baby.
Call 800-585-1051 to join into the discussion with the Breakfast Club.
Talk about it.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Now, if you just joined us, we're asking, have you ever fell in love with a stripper? Now, I frequently DJ strip clubs all the time. And I remember one particular time, our camera guy up here, he was feeling sad, so I took him out for his birthday.
Which one? Nick?
No, Steve. Camera guy Steve.
Oh, Steve. Steve
now,
used to work
I
for
did remote. My set. I was out of the club at about 3 o'clock. I said, yo, Steve, ready to go? He was like, nah, I'll stay for a little bit. I was like, Steve, you know nobody here. He was like, no, but, you know, the stripper's feeling me. I said, no, she's not feeling you. I said, she's not feeling you, sir. She's feeling the money that you're throwing her. He's like, no, I think we have a connection. I said, well, hit me when you get home. So I know you made it home safe. Steve waited there till about 4:20 till she got out of work. That's how much in love he was with that stripper. Now, what happened after that? I don't know. But he was definitely in love.
It's the stripper's job to give you attention, guys. It's a completely transactional relationship.
Yes.
You're throwing your ones. She's dancing. That's what the strip club is for. It's like literally going into a barbershop, paying the barber to cut your hair and saying, yo, I think he's feeling me, yo. He's playing on my neck. No, he's cutting your hair. Okay? It's the same thing with a stripper.
Yeah, but I will say this, and for the strippers out there, when the strippers don't dance and they have conversations with their mark, I'll call them, that's when it gets a little...
They're having conversations to see if you got some goddamn money.
But the conversation
to see if they should be wasting their time with you.
The conversation makes the mark feel special because he's like, wow, you dance for everybody, but you're sitting down talking to me. I think she likes
that's you. Why strippers are great hosts. Drop on the clues bombs for all the strippers out there. That's why they're amazing at what they do, because they make you feel special. They make you feel wanted. And that's how you have to make somebody feel if you want them to throw their money. Salute to all the strippers, man.
Yeah, you ever fell in love with a stripper?
No, I absolutely haven't. Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are strippers or former strippers.
I mean, I never fell in love with a stripper. I mean, you know, I've been fond of one in my day. Okay, but never fell in love.
And the first time you got a was that a strip club?
Yeah, that was I was a kid though. Like that wasn't even I wasn't even old enough to be in the strip club.
My goodness.
I'll tell you this too. We need to be asking this question about the bottle girls, the bartenders. This generation might have definitely fell in love with a couple of bartenders, a couple of bottle girls before the strippers.
Well, hello, who's this?
Yes, hello, this is Sean.
Oh, Sean, it sounds like you fell in love with a stripper or a bottle girl.
Yes, I fell in love with a Hooters girl.
Okay.
Back in the day, me and my friends, we used to go up there up in Connecticut, and... she was a beautiful brown-skinned woman, and I would tip her a lot. And she ended up finessing me into paying for her car payment.
Damn.
And then I remember I would come in the Hooters, and at one point in time, she wasn't giving me the energy and the love that I thought I deserved. But
you hear your goddamn fragile ego? She didn't give me the love I deserve. What the hell you mean?
Yeah, well, you know, I was tipping her nicely, man. Nicely.
Ego, bro. You leading with ego, bro.
Oh, boy. Poor you.
That's all ego.
Hello, who's this?
Hey, it's Mitra. What's up, y'all?
What's up, Peace, Mitra? Who you fell in love with, Mitra?
So, it was my masseuse. So, it was a female masseuse that massaged me, and my husband actually dropped me off at the appointment, and I was like, we go together now? Were you finished? But, yeah, I was like, I was really feeling her, and it was crazy.
What made you feel her so much?
Huh?
What made you feel it so much?
My hands. She knew how to use her hands.
Did she touch places she wasn't supposed to?
No, she wasn't, but I wanted her to.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, my gosh.
So why you ain't keep in touch with her?
She probably did.
I just said it was, we was on vacation, so we were out of town, so.
Okay.
I mean, it is what it is.
All right. Thank you, mama. Hello, who's this?
This is Nick.
Nick, you fell in love with a stripper, bro?
Yeah, man, I think I'm in love with one right now.
What's her name?
Asia, baby. This is man flawless, man. You gotta stop playing with
him. What? Oh, yeah. Lord. Have you tried to holler at her outside of office hours, sir, when she's not working?
Yeah, I mean, she's cool, people. You know, I got the Instagram or whatever. I talk to her over here, got her number. You know, we talked a little bit, but it's hard to get her out the club, man.
Do you spend a lot of money in the club on her?
I've spent a decent amount, but I think where the connection came at is when she came on the podcast.
She came on your podcast?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the Ain't No Face podcast. You know, she came on two different episodes. We call them Stripisodes. So we had her and a couple other people. But, you know, just getting to sit there, interview her, talk to her. I think I'm with this girl.
So why don't you tell her? Why don't you be like, yo, I'm going to be honest with you. I really like you. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like you just did.
Maybe you can offset her her lifestyle. You got enough money to offset her lifestyle?
I make a decent amount, but I think, you know, she get a lot of money already, so the money ain't going to get her. You know, she's used to it.
So, like, show her love. Show her real love. Like, court her. You know what I'm saying? Like, treat her the way you would want, like, somebody to treat your daughter. You would want your father to treat your mom. Like, you show her some real love.
Good luck, man.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Hello, who's this?
This is DJ.
Hey, DJ, what's up, brother? You fell in love with a stripper, bro?
No, man. My baby mom's a stripper, man.
A word. Congratulations.
Yeah. Was she a stripper before or after y'all had the baby?
I was with her before she, you know, she wouldn't be a stripper or whatever. And then she got a job at the strip club, and I started DJing there. I mean, we were just co-parenting. We weren't together or nothing like that. You know what I mean? But, you know, that was my shorty. You know what I mean?
Mm. Okay.
Why y'all not together now?
Oh, man. I had to leave that alone, man. That's like too crazy in there, man. I don't be liking to be in there no more, man. I be chilling out. I got other kids, man, and I got a job now. I just be chilling out, man.
Well, maybe she needs to make you increase your child support so she don't got a script no more.
You stupid. Hello, who's this?
What up? This is Chris out of Baton Rouge, Jeremy.
Chris, what up, man? You fell in love with a stripper, bro?
Oh, yeah, dog. My name is Miss Memphis, man. Oh, my gosh. She blew my mind.
She gave you a lap dance and blew your mind and you in love. What's her name?
Miss Memphis, man. So I got the lap dance and I got her number and all that. And I hooked up with her again. And that second time I hooked up with her, man, I went to the gas station. I got all kind of pills and stuff. Man, I couldn't even finish. I got my money's worth, I'll tell you that.
Damn.
Gracious.
I got my money's worth.
All right, man. Stay away from the gas station pills, man.
Lord have mercy on my poor soul.
What's
man.
That, man? What's the moral of the story?
I mean, there is no moral of the story. Y'all brothers just got to stop letting y'all ego lead, man, because some of y'all ego be making y'all believe things that don't exist, like y'all relationships with these strippers, all right? All a stripper owes you is a dance. That's it. And that's only because the relationship is transactional. You paid for a service. She provided that service. That's that. Y'all get to know each other outside of that, and you know something happens, great. Other than that, goddamn tip and keep it moving. Lord have mercy.
All right, we got more coming up next. Keep it locked. It's the best of the Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
Mike Africa Jr. Welcome, brother.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Man, Mike, you are part of one of the most interesting stories I heard over the past year. Somebody put me onto the whole The Move organization. Yeah. Tell the people, what is The Move organization?
The Move organization was founded by John Africa in 1972. The organization's mission is real simple: protect life. Mm-hmm. And when you got a mission like that, you kind of ruffle some feathers.
And it was the self-sufficiency of the organization that I was really intrigued by.
Yeah, I mean, self-sufficiency for Black people in this country is dangerous. You know, we saw what happened to Tulsa. That was all because of self-sufficiency. Rosewood, you know what I mean?
Philly,
exactly. Exactly. They're dropping bombs on people just because you're self-sufficient and breaking away from their system and creating your own system.
For people that don't know, just break that down, the whole story, because a lot of people won't know what the organization was and what they did and how strong they were in Philly. So.
And there's also a documentary, too, on HBO called 40 Years a Prisoner, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the organization started in 72 by John Africa, my great uncle. Mm-hmm. And the mission, simple, protect life. You know, if you see animals that need help, protect them. If you see people that need help, help them. You know, and when you're talking about, like, protecting people from, like, police and judges and politicians that were crooked and dirty and not really doing their job, you know, they pushed back. And they did. And so, you know, John Africa's a Korean War veteran, and he saw the destruction of life. And he you know, got involved in protecting the environment. And look at, like, what's happening in the Keystone Pipeline. People talking about protecting the environment. You know what I mean? And so the system, they pushed back. They came and they said, you got to stop this. You know, move people at the protest against the zoo or the circus and said, animals, they're not supposed to be in these cages. You don't like being in a cage. Why are you going to put them in a cage? They guys, creatures just like us. So eventually,
Were they militant?
Was Move militant?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, real militant. Mm-hmm. And especially at that time, you know, the revolutionaries at that time were suits and ties. You know, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King was just, you know, mm-hmm. not long after, before that, same with Malcolm. And people was like, yo, what's up with this hair? And, you know what I'm saying, this crazy hair. Dreadlocks wasn't popular in 1972. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Marley ain't really hit the states like that back then. And so the police started coming at people, attacking people. And at one point.
For no reason at all.
For protesting, unrelenting protesting.
What were they protesting at the time?
They were protesting against the Barnum and Bailey Ringling Brothers Circus. Mm-hmm. You know, animals, these animals, this tiger don't belong in no circus. It wasn't, you had to go steal that tiger from Bangladesh just like you had to steal Africans from Africa.
Right. And look at how they changed the circus today now, just in response. It took that long.
Exactly. So pregnant women would be protesting against these
things. And brutalized.
And they were brutalized. And pregnant women were beaten, kicked in the miscarriage by the police. Mm-hmm. And then Move took a stand. They said, well, look, We're going to fight fire with fire. Y'all come at us next time, we're going to come back and we're going to protect ourselves and we're going to defend ourselves. An armed standoff, just like the Panthers. And that led to the police coming and they said, all right, well, Frank Rizzo, who was the mayor at the time, Trump of 1978, he said, all right, the police will be in there to drag them out by the backs of their necks. No question about that, children or not. And they came.
So you had a house in Philly. How many people were in that house when they came?
So the move had multiple houses around the city. You know, it's not a...
And in Virginia, right?
Virginia, yeah, we were in Virginia too. You know, it's a lot of people. So, you know, you don't just live in one house. But that was where we were at that time was the headquarters.
Right.
And at the time, it was like 12 adults and a bunch of kids. Mm. And the police came and they came with tear gas, housing code violations, too many people living in a house or whatever. That was like the reason. Housing code violations. That's it. Nobody killed nobody. Nobody beat nobody. Nobody used a gun to do anything. Housing code violations. The police came like you saw the insurgents. That's the way the police was coming through our house.
That's systemic racism within itself, because they know that a lot of black people, a lot of brown people, they have to live in a house with multiple people because they can't afford to.
Ain't nobody got red like that. Mm-hmm. Like that back so then.
Can I ask you this when it comes to, because we're talking about black people, right? But I know when the movement first started.
Let me finish the story, because he didn't get to the bombing and all that. What happened after that? Because you didn't finish.
So housing code violations, police come, 600 cops come, they shoot tear gas, they're trying to flush people out the house. Y'all got to roll. And the people was like, this is our house, we ain't leaving. And they started shooting tear gas and water cannons from the fire department. And that led to somebody started shooting.
They said 1,000 bullets. They said the police shot allegedly 1,000 bullets into that house, or 10,000 bullets into that house.
10,000 rounds in 90 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
90 minutes.
So okay. There's two different confrontations we're talking about though. This one that I'm talking about is the one where my parents got locked up. This was in 1978. Shots fired. Cop gets shot. He dies. Of course, they blamed it on move. Judge mm-hmm. said, well, we don't know who did it. They checked my mom for powder burns. Nah, she ain't shoot no gun. Don't matter. She was with everybody else. They acted in concert. They're family. We're going to sentence them as a family. 100 years each. Yeah. My mom was pregnant with me at the time.
Yeah, you were born in prison, right?
I was born
right?
in the jail cell yeah. 5 weeks later.
So they dropped a bomb on that house?
So then other move members start protesting about what happened. They like, yo, you can't give nobody 100 years each. That's 900 years. For something you can't, the judge is saying, we don't even know if you did it or not. Mm-hmm. But a cop died, so you're going to be punished for it. So other move members start protesting. And as the protest is going on, the city's response to that was, well, we're going to put an end to them. Mayor of Philadelphia, black mayor. Wilson Good. We're going to put a permanent end to them. Flew a helicopter over our house, dropped a bomb on it.
Holy cow.
Black mayor.
And you guys really went hard for him to be mayor, right? Because you thought there would be changes?
He was saying that he felt like move was innocent. He believed that the move 9 were unjustly charged. And so he felt like he could help. He said, if you make me the mayor, I'll help.
Yeah.
I think his conscience kills him all the time about that, because he's apologized a bunch of times, right?
He has apologized. And you know, the thing about that is when they dropped the bomb, 11 people died, right? The founder, John Africa, my great uncle, my cousin, Frank, and my caretaker. My mother's in prison. You know, I'm 6 years old. I ain't got no mother. I ain't got no father with me. So my caretaker, she was in the house too, Rhonda. And it took another 33 years to actually get the other people out of jail.
Wow.
Where were you when the bomb went off?
I was 4 miles away, 4.4 miles away, watching the smoke in the air. Didn't know what was going on. I'm six, right? You know, how do you explain a six-year-old your family's dead, right? Mm-hmm. So I learned. When there was one survivor of the bombing, Ramona Africa, and she went to jail. They arrested her, put her in jail for riot and arson, and like blamed her for all of this stuff.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We're still kicking it with Mike Africa Jr. Charlamagne.
How was your family misrepresented in the media?
Oh, man. Let me tell you something. When I was growing up, I remember hearing these things. MOVE stands for Monkeys on Vines Everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah. MOVE doesn't mean anything. It just means they like to move, right? That's actually kind of what it is. Movement is necessary, right? If you don't move, you stagnate, right?
Absolutely.
But they would say other things like MOVE needs to take a bath. They don't bathe. Rizzo said all the MOVE needs is a good haircut and a bath to be free.
Wow.
It's disgusting.
You know what I mean? And like, he was very like outwardly racist against us. And the media really played a huge part in like besmirching our name and like misrepresenting who we are and just making us look like we were just a bunch of crazy people who had nothing to live for, nothing to fight for.
Except for Mumia.
Mumia was the only journal. He wasn't the only one, but he was like the main one that would like tell the truth, exactly what happened, as Move said it, and like as the police said it too. Like if you watch the documentary, 40 Years of Prison on HBO Max, you see like there's different parts of that story that show like where the police were saying things like they took Delbert Africa to the hospital, but they should have taken him to the morgue.
Mm.
Right? He said that. Mumia would show that he said that. And then the police would get mad. Like, why would you say that we said that? And he'd be like, well, you said it. You know what I mean? But back then, it was different. Activism in 1970-something was very different than it is in 2021. You know what I mean? Especially with people that look different, that act different, that took a radical stance against police.
Were actually out there. That's the other thing, too. Y'all were actually out there outside on the front line.
Yeah, it wasn't a Twitter war.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was actually people out there on the at the police station knocking on their door like, yo, we here to confront you about this situation. Just like the Panthers.
Right.
You know what I mean? But if you talk about things and you confronting industries for the wrong they doing, they will drop a bomb on you.
Even Mumia as a journalist. Like, you know what I mean? For him just reporting the truth. Like, you think that didn't make him a target?
Just because
him to his current situation?
Right now, today, Mumia has been in prison for 39 years. December 9th will be 40 years. And there's so much evidence that proves that he's innocent. There's another person who actually confessed to the murder.
He said it was a mob hit, right?
He said it was a mob hit.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, Mumia is still in prison. And then, you know, I had this thing. I told somebody, I said, if they ask me about Mumia, I want to say something about this situation, about Maureen Faulkner specifically, the slain cop's wife, ex-wife, or you know, however it goes. You know, it's real unfortunate that this situation is what it is. And I ain't never really liked cops just because of what they did to our family. But I don't want to see a man die. I don't want to see a wife, a widow, right?
Because that's what Move is about. Move is about life.
It's about life. Yeah, and and like it's really messed. I know what it looked like to see people's loved ones die, to see them cry and complain and just go through this thing. And like, you know, but I just know that for Maureen Faulkner, killing Mumia, that's not going to bring her closure.
Right.
Mm. It ain't going to make her feel better.
Mm.
Check this out. Some of the children that were killed on May 13th, 1985, some of the children that were killed were actually shot to death by the police as they were trying to escape the house, escape the burning building in the back alley. Sambor, the police commissioner, right? His son, years later, his son was shot and killed in the back alley of his house, right?
Wow.
And I watched Move members who lost their children in that back alley. I watched them watch the news about what happened to this man,
right,
and his son. And I watched how they processed that information. It didn't make them feel better. It didn't change their view. It didn't help them. It didn't give them any closure. In fact, it made them angrier because they expected it to make them feel better. They hoped it would make them feel better. So I would say that the only thing that I've seen that gave them any pleasure, any closure, was the love that they could put into their own families.
And when you spoke to the mayor, right? You spoke to the mayor after everything, years later.
Yeah.
Which one, Rizzo or Good?
Wasn't Good.
Good.
Did it make you feel better? Now, he was the mayor that gave the okay to bomb that house. How was that conversation? I read somewhere you said you vomited after the meeting. But how was that meeting? And how was he during that meeting?
Bro, that was the worst feeling I ever had in my life. To like have to sit across and talk to the mayor that bombed my family.
Mm.
That was the worst thing I ever had to do in my life. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing.
How is that even legal? How are they able to do that?
A lot of things ain't legal, but legality don't really mean much when it comes to government.
Because that's domestic terrorism.
Where did the police get a bomb from?
Yeah.
Anything is legal when they want to do it, right? Like, you know, they just create this and make this stuff up.
Then you're trying to escape and they're shooting you
so
in the
crazy
back.
And so talking to the mayor.
Did he apologize?
He did. And let me make something real clear. It wasn't easy to do that, and it wasn't something that I wanted to do. My family nominated me to do it because our people were in prison and they were dying in prison. And the mayor, Wilson Good, after the bombing, he had made a statement. He said he was sorry for what happened. He wished he could change it. And he said that if there was anything that he could do, he would try to help. So there was a street sign. He was being honored with his very own street sign, Wilson Good Way.
That's crazy.
And the public in Philly just went off. They went crazy. And so he was like, I'm sorry. I wish I could change it. If there's anything that we could do, you know. So my family nominated me to go talk to him. I went and talked to him. I said, there's something you can do. You can help me free my family. And he did. He helped. He wrote support letters. He offered them jobs if they needed it.
Well, how many got up? How many family members got up?
Once we put that in motion, my dad came home, and then everybody else came home.
Question, two things. Does the apology matter? Yeah. Did it matter for you?
Did it matter
for
you?
As far as your own healing?
On a personal level,
yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, on a personal level, nah. It matters publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And it matters when you're dealing with politicians, and it mm-hmm. matters when you're trying to take things from one step to the other. But personally, nah, it don't matter. My family's still gone.
Absolutely. So you got him to apologize. So now that he apologized, that's an admission of guilt.
Yeah.
Right? So now you can hold him accountable. And you did.
Could you?
Yeah.
Was that enough to get you closer to healing, I guess, getting the family released?
Yeah. For me personally, mm-hmm. yeah. Because, okay. See, bro, like, all I want to do is like, honor the legacy of my family.
Right.
There's nothing more important to me than my family. And to see my family come home, even if they're mad about something, even if they don't like the fact that I went and talked to Wilson Good, the fact that they home and breathing free air
right.
and eating free food, hey, that's good enough for me.
So your father was in jail for 40 years,
yeah.
right? You grew up without your mom or dad.
Right.
What was it like when they came home?
It was euphoric. I mean, it was like, I never did drugs before, but for the people that talk about how good it make them feel, that's how I felt. I mean, it felt like I was floating on cloud nine, for real. Like, I felt so good, and it lasts for so long. Like, I remember one time my mom came home. We sat on this chest that I built, right? I built this little thing outside of my bathroom door, and I sat on it one day. We sat on it together. We started talking around 7 o'clock p.m., and we didn't stop talking until the sun came up.
Wow.
Until it was time for me to go to work.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
A lot to catch up on.
You know what I'm saying? And it just felt so good to be able to do that. When my mom called me on the phone, like, I don't have to limit our conversation, but I can if I need to, though.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
I can say,
yeah,
Mom,
yeah,
I'll call
yeah.
you back. I ain't never been able to
yeah,
say that before.
Yeah.
You know, so it just wow. it felt real good to be able to see her eat some of the food she wanted to be able to eat, get, you know, medical attention that she needed, you know. Just to see her family members that she hadn't seen for a long time, ailing older aunts and uncles. It's, you know, freedom is real important.
All right, we have more with Mike Africa Jr. When we come back, don't move. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We're still kicking it with Mike Africa Jr. Charlamagne?
I feel like the city of Philadelphia, the state of Pennsylvania, owes y'all some type of reparations.
Well, you know, let me tell you about this, bro. It gets worse. After they dropped the bomb,
mm-hmm.
they killed all the people.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give the bodies back to the families.
What?
It appears that the University of Pennsylvania, the Medical Examiner's Office of Philadelphia, stole their bodies.
Wow.
What reason? Was there a reason?
Research.
For
research, yeah.
We
yeah,
just
yeah,
found
yeah.
out. We just found out in April of 2021 that Penn Museum and Princeton had this research study, Losing Personhood, a Quest in Anthropology, whatever it's called, and they taught that to over 5,000 students, and they were holding up bones from the people that were murdered.
Wow.
So it's like, oh yo, God. And it gets worse than that. Like, so just recently, the mother of one of those girls that we found out about, like, she found out about this, thought her daughter was buried, right? She found out about it. A month later, she died.
Wow.
The city of Philadelphia and the Penn Museum and Princeton, I don't even know what I don't know I don't I just think about this like for myself as a black man from Philly, right? Mm-hmm. If I went to somebody's grave and just took their bodies and was like posting it up, yo, Charlamagne, we're gonna do this thing, right? Yo, get your boys together. I'm gonna show you these bones that I got from these Jewish people, right? And we're going, you know what I'm saying? And just bring your peoples, right? And pay me, and I'm gonna show you these bones. They some serious specimens right here.
Mm.
5,000 people. And then you know what they said when we confronted them on it? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
If I had known you wanted them back, I'd have gave them to you.
We've been so used to y'all being our property and us having license over y'all bodies all of these years. We didn't think it would be different when you died.
Yeah. Like, what's the problem? You know, and then taking pictures with them in front of, like, a wall of skulls that they stole from African graves. I was on Mark Lamont Hill show the other day, right?
Who's the Mark?
And I was like, yo, this is how they turn peaceful people into violent people.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, what are you supposed to do? If I did that to one of those people down there, what would they do to me? If I did to one of them cops that shot one of my move brothers and sisters, if I went down there, they crib and was like, yo, you coming with me, kill you, and then, you know, burn you up, and then walk around with your body in the back of my pocket and drive it around in my car. Like,
and the irony is, we're the ones that get labeled with the stereotype of being violent.
Violent, gross, crazy. Everything that they said we were is exactly what they are.
Times 100. How little they value our lives. And absolutely. Then you can say Black Lives Matter and they get mad about saying that.
Oh no, Police Lives Matter.
Right, Blue Lives Matter.
Blue Lives Matter, yeah.
So you think the residents of that neighborhood or the families will ever be compensated?
No.
Never.
Yeah. Nah, man, like them people.
Are y'all fighting for that?
I'm fighting for justice for all.
Okay.
Like for real, I'm on this campaign, Justice for Move. And within that, the Osage neighbors, the ones that are still alive, because most of them are gone now. I mean, that was 36 years ago, and a lot of them were, you know, older people then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm fighting for justice. That's my job. Just my campaign. Justice
for Move. And there was no repercussion for the cops or for the judge or for the mayor or nothing. Like,
they got granted immunity.
Right.
They were granted qualified immunity. And the judge said, there was a ruling that, okay, we're going to make them pay. The jury said, we're going to make them pay $1 a week for their crime.
Which is disrespectful.
That's very disrespectful. But the judge took that away. He said, nah, we ain't even doing that. Immunity.
And they did forensics and saw that the bullets came from the outside of the house. Because at first they were trying to say somebody was shooting from inside the house at the cops. But the truth is, they determined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, so what happens? So one of my jobs for justice, I say John, I'm from Philly. Like,
it's all right.
We know exactly what you mean.
I say, okay.
I did radio in Philly for like 10, 8 months.
So one of my Johns in Philly is...
He made it like a 10-year.
I know, they just say, yeah.
He said, wait, eight months? But you know what John is if you've been 8 months. So one of my Johns is accountability. Like if we talking about change, what happened in Tulsa is 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And them people, they never got no accountability.
Right.
Right? There's got to be accountability. What would make them stop doing these things if there was no accountability?
They haven't stopped. That's the crazy part.
You know, they haven't stopped. They ain't going to stop unless somebody stop them.
And think about how people could be thriving today if they were able to access what was theirs and their families generationally.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, my dad is so smart. He Villanova graduate from prison. You know what I mean? Like we've lost so much that they've taken from us. Just, you know, they just hate everything about us because they ain't us.
I want to ask you about that. Why do you think the same country, America, that tells us pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, attacks us and takes our boots whenever we do just that?
Man, because I'm telling you, man, they got complexes about us. They mad because they ain't got what we got. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then the people, like, you know. I saw a flag flying the other day. It said, give me liberty or give me death. And I looked at that, John, and I said, man, that couldn't have been no black person that wrote that. You know what I mean?
Or, of course.
And it ain't going to be no Spanish person that say that. Mm-hmm. Not in this country.
Mm-mm.
You say something like that, they will oblige you.
That's right.
You know, but what we do have, man, we got so much. We got creativity. We got love. Like, we got a love. Like, the mothers in the black community that love their kids, like, when you see that, and, like, you know, like, they just got a problem with us because we us. You know, but that. That's their problem.
That's right. What does justice look like for you?
I think justice for me look like do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Well, you can never expect a white man to do that.
You can't expect a white man. Nah, you can't. But you know what? With people understanding the importance of these situations, and then white people are starting to get affected by this stuff too.
That's right.
These things that we was complaining about as black people and as minority people, white people starting to complain about them.
Yeah, because they're doing the same thing to poor white people in a lot of cases.
And those poor white people have connections, and then white women be loving black men, mm-hmm. and then vice versa. So, mm-hmm. like, they be integrating and connecting. So it's like our problem is becoming their problem too. But I'm saying do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think what justice looked like to me is if I did that to one of them, they should get the same treatment that they would give me.
Not in this caste system, right, but America's
that's the way. And if they can't, then what they do? They give reparations. They teach about it. They still talking about Crispus Attucks. They still talk not Crispus Attucks. They still talking about
Columbus.
Paul Revere.
Oh, Paul Revere. Yeah.
And the Redcoats are coming. Like, yeah, okay. Well, I'm saying the Redcoats is coming. Like, let's the same way that they wanted freedom from their oppressor, we want mm-hmm. freedom. And if you can't get it, then we want to fight for it.
We appreciate you for joining us and sharing your story.
And how do people reach you?
I'm on Instagram at Mike Africa Jr., Twitter, Facebook. And that's where I'm at. And also, you can, same thing, www.mikeafricajr.com.
All right.
Is this about to be a movie, too? I feel.
Yo, the last three calls I got were Oscar-winning film directors.
And somebody I know, too? Or
probably.
Okay.
I mean, it's they household names. They're not even like, gotcha. You know what I mean?
Right.
They household names. Probably, for sure, you know.
Yeah, but it matters so much who also works with you to tell the story.
Look, I got three rules. The policy of the organization that I'm bringing hard for anybody is, number one, we speak for ourselves. Number two, if you want to tell our story, we will steward that project. Number three, if you don't want to do either one of the one and two, we protest against
that's right.
Because we speak for ourselves. We here. We not. This is not 100 years later where we ain't here no more. We mm-hmm. right here. And mm-hmm. if you just want to try to go over our head, nah. Nah, we got to speak for ourselves because they done did too much damage to our reputation.
Damn right.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it with any production company that's not black or from Philly.
I definitely want to do it with somebody from Philly. But like the producer that did 40 Years of Prisoner, he's from Philly, Tommy Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely want somebody that recognizes us as us and who we are. So that's definitely important. So we'll see how it goes.
Let's put that out in the atmosphere.
Let's put that out there.
It's Mike Africa Jr. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club. Your mornings will never be the same.
Hey, it's Angela Yee. Don't let weak hair hold you back. Carol's Daughter's Goddess Strength Collection supports hair as it gets longer for hair that's 15 times stronger after one use. Available at carolsdaughter.com and your local retailer.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
The Breakfast Club. Your mornings will never be the same.
Hey, listen, if you hear me talking to you right now, that means I'm not really here. Okay, we're on vacation. It's a best of show. But, you know, Donkey of the Day, I remember 10 years ago when I started this segment, I said that I hope that one day, you know, it'll grow to be a legendary, you know, radio segment. It's still not up for me to say that, but we've had some pretty good ones. Okay, they say this one is a classic. Here you go.
It's time for Donkey of the Day.
Donkeys of the Day, ask Charlamagne.
I'm a Democrat, so being Donkey of the Day is a little bit of a mixed up.
So like a donkey. Yeehaw.
Okay.
Donkey of the Day.
The Breakfast Club, bitches.
Now, I've been called a lot in my 23 years, but Donkey of the Day is a new one.
Well, okay, let me blow my nose. Okay. Listen, Donkey of the Day goes to self-love ambassador, entrepreneur, social media relationship expert, author. He's wrote books like Heal Together Without Hurting Each Other. He wrote another book called Single Mothers Are for Grown Men Only. And he even wrote a book called A Cheating Man's Heart, a fiction novel. I put fiction novel in air quotes because based on all these new developments, it's safe to say Derrick Jackson's book, A Cheating Man's Heart, was probably based on a true story. Now, Derrick has built a following, basically calling men out on their behavior, okay, holding men accountable. I'm not mad at that. He's done it to me. He's done it to Little Duval. He's done it to Gilly the King. He's done it to Isaac Hayes III. This is his thing, okay, holding men accountable. And I'm fine with that. I had him on my podcast, Brilliant Idiots, a few years ago. And on that podcast, we promised to hold each other accountable. Well, Derrick Jackson, it's your turn to be held accountable. Okay, let's just get right to it. Derrick Jackson is full of shit. Okay.
A what?
I can't curse and you know that. So you say, oh, what? He's full of that. Okay. He's a liar. A textbook narcissist and manipulator who gets what he wants at the expense of other people's well-being. This is a guy who will get online and say this about men who have cheated.
I have no sympathy for a man who finds it to be difficult to be faithful after being in a promiscuous lifestyle, and neither should you. Nobody told you to be promiscuous before the relationship, and nobody made you be monogamous with just her. You don't want her? Let another man have her. Simple. And more times, I would say 9 times out of 10, when the dude gets caught cheating, that wasn't his very, very first time cheating. That was his only time getting caught.
I agree with you, Derek. Okay. And guess what? Derrick Jackson himself is a cheater. Oh, he just got exposed by a woman named Candace. I can't pronounce her last name, but Derrick Jackson, who is a married man, brought this woman to Atlanta to stay in his house. He shares with his wife and kids. The woman Candace, who Derrick was cheating with, actually took pictures of her laying in the bed. He shared with his wife in their Atlanta home. Derrick Jackson, who spells his last name J-A-X-N. Why? I don't know. That bothers me. Jackson may be a slave name, but when it comes to black people, it's one of the greatest last names you can ever have. Why would you hack that? I mean, when you're talking Jacksons, you're talking Samuel L., Janet, Jesse, Bo, Randy, Mahalia, and of course, Michael. But actually, I'm glad you don't spell your last name Jackson, because you don't deserve to be in that Jackson power ranking, okay? If you were, you would be at the bottom right under Andrew. You know Andrew Jackson, 7th president of the United States, slave master, ethnic cleanser, tyrant. If you actually spelled your last name Jackson correctly, you would be at the bottom of the list near him because of the level of evil that you display. Yes, my brother. See, what we're going to do here today is stop the shenanigans. Okay, see, my father always told me that when you lie, you're not lying to nobody but yourself. And I have watched you, since this story broke, just lie and attempt to continue to manipulate the public. I mean, that's what you do. You manipulate people. You get online and have these bad faith arguments, which is also textbook narcissism, meaning you don't care about or even try to understand the people that you speak about. You said it yourself. I don't have no sympathy for a man who cheats. Not only do you not care or attempt to understand the people you're talking about to have any sympathy or empathy, all right? You are dedicated to deliberately misunderstanding and mischaracterizing others to make yourself look good. You like to paint other men as being dishonest and deceptive and morally corrupt. Why? Because you're a narcissist, and that's what narcissists do, project their BS onto other people. The reason you love to paint men as dishonest, deceptive, and morally corrupt is because that's what you are. See, Derrick, I waited to give you Donkey because I wanted to see how you would react to all of this, and you reacted by doing what you've been doing all this time, and that's lying. See, I saw the first video you posted when you first addressed the allegations. You said that you and your wife were separated during that time and that you and Candace have had a sexual relationship without actually having sex. Listen.
I'm in screw it mode, F it mode. I'm hitting up old chicks. I really don't care at this point. One of those people was a girl named Candace. Now, here's the thing. So me and Candace have had a sexual relationship without actually having sex.
Fallacies, nonsense, word salad, lies, denying, changing definitions. This is textbook narcissism, people. Lying about what happened, denial, delusion, trying to confuse us to make us doubt the reality of the situation. See, narcissists are often ill-equipped to have mature discussions or resolve conflicts, but in their mind, they are experts at it. Okay, he don't even really understand what he's saying, but in his mind, he's being rational, reasonable, and correct. But the reality is, this nigga just lying. That's why what he's saying don't make no sense. Okay, we had a sexual relationship but didn't have sex. That's why it's just an incoherent rant with no logic, because it's a lie. Then hours later, Derrick Jackson came back online with his wife to admit that he did cheat and that he was unfaithful to his wife. Listen to this guy.
The truth is that Derrick Jackson was involved with other women outside the marriage. And by involved, I want to be clear, I'm not talking about just casually kicking it, maybe a lunch or something like that. I'm talking about as serious as sex.
First name, nigga, last name, please. Derrick, if nobody else has told you, what you did to your wife was wrong. All right, she had nothing to do with this. She wasn't with you when you was out here cheating with these women, so she shouldn't be with you when you're doing damage control. This story has nothing to do with her. Nothing. And what's sad is you are more concerned about saving your business than you are about saving your marriage. You are more concerned about what we think of you than you are about what your wife thinks of you. King, if you're gonna use your wife as a human shield, like Nino Brown used that kid as a human shield in New Jack City, at least get her glammed up. Okay? You got her up there looking like she forgot it was a second part to the Busted Challenge. I was waiting for her to drop and come up fresh, but that never happened. And guess what? You don't care. You didn't care about the backlash she could receive. You be on social media all the time. You know how cruel people are. Not only does your wife have to heal from your infidelity now, she has to heal from the bullying that she is currently receiving online. But a narcissist like you don't give a damn, because your goal as a narcissist is to dominate and be perceived as right at all costs. Do you know the complex your wife is going to have now? It's impossible to not be impacted by what people say about you online. Ain't enough God and Jesus in the world. You can put on the whole armor of God and God will protect you, but you still gonna feed into what people are saying. And you could have protected your queen from all that because she had nothing to do with it. This is about you and your behavior. If she forgives you, great, but that don't mean drag her out and have her on your arm looking like a damn puppet off Crank Yakers and you the chief manipulator controlling all her movements. But that's what narcissists do. They deflect, attack, project. That's why he had his wife there, to deflect. Then he started talking about John Gray because Shade Room asked him a question. You should have just ignored that, but you can't, because narcissists love to shift attention from what they are saying and doing. This brother Derrick Jackson went so far as to deflect and blame Jesus. Listen.
At that point, I had a beef with God. I gave my life to Christ and my whole life fell apart. My marriage fell apart. At this point, I'm not seeing my kids, and I really honestly just went to a place of effort.
It's the audacity for me. I've never heard a person say, I gave my life to God and now my life is effed up. That's not how that works. Derrick, God told me to tell you, stop lying, nigga. Okay, God, Jesus, the Holy Ghost, they don't got nothing to do with your ways. In fact, they told me to remind you that this is nothing but the devil. That's who should be getting the blame here, the devil. And the devil's name is Derrick Jackson. You're the liar. You're the manipulator. You're the narcissist. Giving your life to Christ didn't F your life up. You effed your life up because you live in a lie. And you had the nerve to blame God. You did the same thing to Jesus that you did to your wife. Bought Jesus into it for no reason. But the reason you do this is because you never truly have to take responsibility for their toxic behavior. That's what narcissists do. Narcissists do things like this. The only reason he bought Jesus up is because he never truly wants to take responsibility for his bad behavior. Derrick, I decided to give you Donkey of the Day after what I heard you say last night, because it confirmed for me what I already knew. You are a textbook narcissist. Like, you need to be studied. See, gaslighters, narcissists love to speak in the third person. Why? Because it distances them from their actions. Listen to this dude yesterday sitting in the car. Listen.
I hope he understands that all the accountability in the world is not going to rebuild broken trust. Not on a personal level, and even with the public that he's addressing. Like, even his most loyal supporters at this point will probably have a raised eyebrow from this point forward whenever he wants to condemn another man for something like this, and rightfully so. So hopefully he understands that. Nonetheless, I know some people will see this type of video, even though he's come forward and he's been completely honest. Some people are just going to close the book on D. I'm more so on the side of his wife. and just basically letting this be a new chapter of how I see him, because I do believe that his content over the years has helped a tremendous amount of people. Lord, you know, he tells the truth. He speaks facts. And quite honestly, I'm gonna be real with y'all, I've needed several new chapters in my own life.
When gaslighters, narcissists feel that not enough people are praising them, they praise themselves. Speaking in third person is a reassurance to the gaslighter narcissist that he is worthy of adoration. Derek, it's just simply time for you to shut the F up forever. Take a break. I know last year with COVID, money probably was tight because you weren't getting booked for speaking engagements to show up to lie to people. And I know you see your business crumbling before your eyes, but King, just go get help. You need to do some real soul searching. You need to do some real therapy, and you need to fix what's wrong with you. Don't get online today trying to project, deflect, and attack anyone else. Prove to us that you are not a narcissist by shutting the hell up. I challenge you to disable all your social media and go away for some months. Vanish. I know as a narcissist, you believe that you can talk your way out of this situation, but no. Because see, if you don't stop now, I know where you're going to go from here. What's going to happen is instead of really taking responsibility for your actions, you're going to continue to deflect and start attacking other people. And that's when it's going to get bad for you. Because right now it's just Candace. Well, man, oh, man, there's so many women that are ready to talk about how you tried to holler at them. And if you don't stop while you're ahead, it's going to get worse. And I know it may feel like it can't get worse, but Derek, it absolutely can. Just go away for a while. I know you got an extremely fragile ego and shaky self-esteem. You're going to be online looking for the handful of people who's still stupid enough to support you. You're going to be reposting them and retweeting them to receive more false validation, looking for folks to side with you and tell them that you are right and good and blah, blah, blah. Well, you can prop your wife up. You can deflect and attack others, blame others, act like you're happily married now, and continue to use this situation to promote that book of lies you have on your website with you and your wife on the cover. But since you, the narcissist, like to speak in third person, let's end this with Derek Jackson giving a piece of advice to Derek Jackson. Listen.
Public service announcement. Marriage doesn't make a man marriage material. See, through the media and sometimes firsthand experience, marriage has been marketed as what it could and really should be, a long-lasting, beautiful union, but it's not a magic trick that wipes away a dude's ain't ways forever. You can go get the prettiest ribbon you can find and put it on a turd. It's still gonna be a piece of
I agree, Derek. You can put a ribbon on a piece of and it's still a piece of, okay? And if you've proved anything to us this week, it's that you, sir, are a piece of. Can you change that? Sure, we all grow. But you have to make a commitment to yourself and not this idea of yourself that you have created online. Please let Remy Ma give Derek Jackson the biggest hee-haw.
Hee-haw, hee-haw. You stupid motherfucker. Are you dumb?
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Woo.
Well said. Well said. All right. Thank you for that donkey today. Now, don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Best of The Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building, our guy, our friend, Joe Coy.
Let's go.
You got an autobiography y'all called Mixed Plate Chronicles of an All-American Combo. What does that mean, Joe?
The title, Mixed Plate?
Yes.
You know, Hawaii is one of my favorite places to go. They have a dish, if you've ever been to Hawaii, called Mixed Plate. And when you look at that dish, it has all these amazing items on there. It's got Korean barbecue, Japanese, teppanyaki. It's got everything on there. It's got tempura. It's got spam. It's got mac salad. It's got everything on it. Individually, all that stuff is delicious. But you put it all on one plate, it's just beautiful. And that's how I look at my life here. And I just look at it as just like if we could just all mix together on one plate, we'll be beautiful.
Interesting.
And you have recipes in the book as well with all the Come different on. Chapters.
I had to put it on there. I gotta be an ambassador for our food, Angela.
I was like, I should try this chicken. What is it, adobo?
Chicken adobo.
I had chicken adobo.
Where did you have it?
I think I had it at Nicole's restaurant. What's Nicole's restaurant in
Jeepney.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I had chicken adobo. It's amazing.
You know what I love, Charlamagne?
What?
Your beard looks like Envy's old beard before he painted it.
Because mine is real. You know what I'm saying? I let my grades come in. I'm not hiding them like Envy is.
I don't know what y'all talking about. Shout to DJ Khaled. Shout to Rick Ross. Shout to Diddy. Shout to Kevin Hart. I don't know what y'all talking about.
Shout out
Why
to
Why are you Craig. Trying to bring everybody down with you?
I'm just shouting my people out.
Yeah, you did kind of hate on some other people by doing that.
I'm just shouting them out. That's all.
You should have shouted out Sharpie, Crayon. Right.
That's like right. If you get a cheater right. And you shout out all the other cheaters.
Yeah.
I don't know what y'all talking about.
You should have shouted out JFM.
JF.
What the hell's JF?
just for men.
Just for, exactly. He keeps saying the beard is real, but the color is not. Listen.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Joe, does your book focus more on like your background and upbringing or like the journey once you made it into comedy?
I wanted to tell people just how hard it was for me to make it, you know, in this entertainment business and the struggle it was just being a mixed kid growing up. You know, we talk about systemic racism now, and I really didn't even know what that was, Charlemagne, until this is all, you know, in light now, you mm-hmm. know, but I didn't know I was actually a part of it until I started reading my book back in the studio. And I was like, God damn, I was part of this. I was part of this type of systemic racism, being put in certain groups or not being able to do certain shows because of what I was talking about or what I look like, or, you know what I mean? It was just, I didn't really know it until I started writing the book. And I was like, wow, just how my mom went through her struggles, you know, in the 80s, you know, being an Asian woman raising these kids by herself in America and just dealing with the racism that she had to face.
Were you ever able to assimilate, Joe, a little bit? Did anybody ever mistake you for just a white guy?
No. They always looked at me weird. Like mm-hmm. I had the hazel eyes, like they're light, mm-hmm. but the roundness wasn't there. They always noticed. They were like, what are you?
Yeah, what
is that? Mm. What is this?
Was it very difficult to write this book? Was it difficult going back on some of the feelings and some of the things that you had to think about? How difficult?
Yeah, the most difficult part was writing about my brother, and it was hard for me to talk about my brother. But I will say this, and I told Charlemagne this before, that you know when you brought up mental health and you know you put it out there and make people accept it, you know, because a lot of people that have to deal with mental health issues. And I hate saying this publicly, you're embarrassed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially when you grow up with a brother that has, schizophrenia and the trauma that it put our family through. And I'm not saying my brother's a bad guy. He's, you know, he had mental health issues and it was very strenuous in our family. And it was a hard time, but I also went through this time where I didn't want to talk about it. Like I would always go, oh, do you have any siblings? I'd always say, oh, I got two sisters, but I would never say my brother. Cause I knew once they asked me about my brother, it would go into this whole other world of like, oh, where is he? And I got to tell him that he's in the hospital. And then I got to talk about his mental health issues. Then I felt like I'm the only one mm-hmm. and it just sucked. So yeah. Being able to, you know, especially like people like you, Charlemagne, it's just like how now people are open about mental health and, You don't feel alone anymore. Mm-hmm. So like I know how important therapy is now. It is very important.
And that therapy today.
Yeah, man. Just yo, I'm telling you, Charlamagne, when I read this in the studio, I had to do the audio version. That was the best therapy session of my life, man. Just reading the chapter on my brother alone. I remember I cried at the end. I remember I had to take a break. And I just remember this weight being lifted like, yo, it's out.
Wow.
It's finally out. You know what I mean? I'm everyone knows now and mm-hmm. and I love it. And by the way, I love my brother. This is no way I'm not trying to say anything bad. My brother's he's one of the funniest guys in the family. It's just mm-hmm. he's dealing with, you know, mental health issues mm-hmm. and we're not alone. I just want everyone to know that you're not alone.
Word.
And that's difficult. You were very honest about that because I'm sure there were times you felt like your life could have been in danger, your mom's life could have been in danger.
So many times.
Because of that.
Oh man, we had so many cops at the house. You know, it was always physical. There was always jail time for my brother. You know, always in and out of hospitals. So, yeah, it was traumatizing, man, as a kid. And you know, I didn't like talking about it. I really didn't.
You know, how do you feel about that? Because you would be the perfect person to ask. You know, let's say something happens with your brother that is violent. And you said he had to go to jail. Is that necessarily right? Because mentally he wasn't right. So he might not have known what he was doing. But do you still put somebody like that in jail? Or do you say, no, we understand he wasn't in his right mind at the time. Let's continue to give him help and not do jail. Because he doesn't know what he did wrong. So is jail really what he should be sent to?
I think jail is, you know, the initial, you know what I mean? What he did, you know, he would be physical with people. He would hurt people, you know what I mean? And they don't know. They're arresting somebody. But immediately he always gets into the, you know, immediately he goes right back into the system. He stays in the hospital and, you know, he gets the medicine that he needs and the therapy that he needs. But It's a struggle with my brother. It's hard, man. You know, my brother just called me 3 days ago. It was his birthday. And you get a glimpse. You get a small glimpse, man. The window opens and there's Robert. And you love it and you enjoy it. And then, boom, the window closes. And that's the hard pill to swallow. That's the part you're just like, man, you know? Mm-hmm. So it felt good to be able to talk about that in the book.
Word.
All right, we got more with comedian Joe Coy. When we come back, don't move. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning. Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha Guy. We are the Breakfast Club. We're still kicking in with comedian Joe Coy. Yee.
I had texted Joe Coy also when I was reading it just to tell him that I thought the book was excellent just because it's not just about jokes and about being funny, but it really is a hard path that you had to go through to even get to where you are today. It took you like 15 years,
yeah,
pretty much.
It took me 15 years just to get on The Tonight Show. And just always dealing with like, oh, I don't think they'll get it. You know, you might want to not talk about that. It's just like stuff like that was just kind of like whack. You know what I mean? But I would listen to it because it was just like, all right, well, this is normal, right? I got to adjust. I got to adapt to whatever it is to get me in. But it just sucked, man.
It feels, you know, to me, Joe, like when you started. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just like, you know, no one really knows the struggle of being a half white, half Asian kid, being raised by a Filipino mom, dad. You know, dad moved out, and now here's my mom that just got to this country, and she's dealing with racism all around her, but she's just like, even though she's American, she feels like a visitor, so she doesn't want to approach anybody when they're doing something messed up, you know what I mean? And here I am, a little kid, seeing my mom go through that. It's just like, it's fucked up. I didn't, like, there's this one story I wrote about my mom when we went upstairs to go claim some prize that we won at the mall, and this kid turned around and pulled his eyes back on my mom, and I just remember like when I wrote about it, just I couldn't believe how much trauma that caused me because I knew it by detail. You know what I mean? And I remember my mom putting her hand on my head, just going, he doesn't know Joseph. He's just being funny. Like, that's just her accepting the fact that this is normal. You know what I mean? And she's scared to say anything because in her mind, she's a visitor. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's just, oh, he doesn't know Joseph. He's just being funny. But like, no, that's fucked up. You know? And she doesn't need to go through that. And now, like, you need to have a voice and you need to be able to say something. And I'm glad we're in a time that we're in right now where people are vocal and we have platforms that'll support that now. We don't have to wait till fucking 6 o'clock evening news and hope to God that they talk about something that happened locally in Seattle to let the world know that. If that something happens in Seattle, everyone's going to know about it. We're going to Instagram. We're going to Facebook. We're going to let everybody know what happened.
And I'm glad that, because it's like, as a kid growing up, you would see all these jokes all the time. Like, whether it was jokes around Asian people or jokes around Caribbean people or Black people or Jewish people. And when kids made jokes, 9 times out of 10, they got it from their parents or family members. But you don't realize how much it can hurt somebody until you get older and you start realizing.
Yeah.
I think it's good that we're having these conversations now. So hopefully parents will teach their kids a lot different than we were taught or that, you know, we've seen, you know, in our day.
Yeah, exactly. And like now we have that voice where we're like, no, you don't have to go through that. You know, I did this documentary for Guy Tori, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Fat Tuesdays over at the Comedy Store. And that was one of the rooms that accepted me right away. But like, if you really look at the show, the reason why it was on a Tuesday night, like, does anyone really understand why the all Black show was on a Tuesday night? It's because it's the only night no one wants to go to a club.
Correct.
It's the night that no one wants to pay for a ticket. Mm-hmm. You got to beg for someone to come do a free show, but here's the hottest ticket in town. You know what I mean? And it was at the store. It's like, why were those shows okay? You know what I mean? Why do we have to give them a theme? Like, oh, the Black Knight? Well, let's give it a hip-hop name. You know what I mean? And no disrespect, Guy did what he had to do because that was the norm. He was just accepting the fact that it was a night. Like, thank you for giving me this night. I'm going to blow it up. And it's to this day, it's still like legend. No one put out as many stars as Fat Tuesdays. Look at the receipts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Look at it. Look who came out of Fat Tuesdays, from Chris Tucker all the way to everybody, I can't even name them all. Kevin Hart to everybody came out of that show. You know what I mean?
But is it fair for comedians to have to, you know, I grew up where comedy was comedy. I mean, I've heard comedians go at Asian people. I heard comedians go at black people. I heard comedians go at Caribbean, anything. But, you know, as a comic, should you have to watch what you say? Or is it all in the vein of it's just comedy?
I think you need to just be responsible with what you say, right? You got to understand, like, yeah, there are people that'll be offended and hurt. And yeah, you do have the right to change the channel. But I also think as a comic, you're also responsible. It's like, you know, when you're being hurtful, you know, mm-hmm. you know, when it's,
do you know,
it's not even, I think so. I believe so. You know what I mean? You know, the difference when you hear something, you're like, yo man, that ain't even coming from funny.
But think about right? Think about like an old show, like in Living Color. Mike Tyson ran down on Keenan Ivory Wayans because he didn't like the way Keenan Ivory was portraying him. But that was hilarious.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was so funny.
But not to Mike.
But that was also the norm back then. Mm-hmm. It was okay to talk like that back then because, you know, society accepted it. And then, of course, black people were only being a certain way because they knew that was the way to get in into these doors that were, like, closed. You know what I mean? That wouldn't let us. They're like, oh, we got to act a certain way? Okay, well, then we'll joke around about this because you, the people with power, mm-hmm. are laughing at it. Does that make sense?
No,
it's kind of like Asians. It's like, dude, like, we had to do what it was to make you happy to let us in. And that sucks. And I was a victim of that. I had to do that.
I was going
to
ask you that because I've been watching you for so long, Joe, like, you know, since Chelsea. But it seemed, when you started leaning, like, really, like, just embracing the Filipino aspect of your life, it seemed like that's when you took off to me.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I always wanted to talk about. But, you know, when you go back, you had to figure out how to get in because no one wants to hear about your Asian, your Filipino mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always got the same note, you know. They were like, oh, I don't think middle America will get that. And I'm like, what the are you guys talking about? My mom's just a mom. She just happens to be Filipino, but she's still doing mom.
Right. I feel like there's certain things that are universal. Since you were talking about this story about getting the prize, right? And she made you guys fill out like a raffle ticket, like all these raffle tickets to try to win this TV. I feel like my parents would have made us do that too.
Yeah.
Try to win a TV.
What about the Tupperware joke? Like, it's just, you know, my mom using Cool Whip containers for Tupperware. Like, why is middle America not going to get it? Everyone uses that kind of Tupperware. You know what I mean? It's just like, I didn't understand why I always get those notes. Why they always fell on. By the way, can I ask you guys a quick question?
No.
Why does middle America depend on what the world is listening to? I'm so sick of that fucking excuse. When they go, I don't think middle America will get it. Well, you know what? The world gets it. Like, it's.
Do people still say that now? Or was
yeah,
that
they still second? Say that. Yeah. They still say that. I'm like, yo, I'm so sick of that excuse.
Yeah, I was just talking about that the other day. I forgot what I was talking about, but I was like, middle America. I was like, oh, you know what I was talking about? I was speaking about how a few years ago, it's like maybe like 4 years ago, somebody was like, Michael B. Jordan wasn't famous enough to be on SNL, right? This is what one of the SNL execs said. But it's because of that. It's because middle America didn't know who Michael B. Jordan was at the time.
That makes no sense to me. Hey, look, I love my fans in Ohio. I'm just saying, who are these executives that keep falling on middle America as the excuse? It's bullshit. I never got that.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently got that. I'm not going to say who, but it was like 5 years ago. It was the same thing. I don't think they'll get it. Middle America is not going to get it. I'm like, what?
Middle America.
What are you talking about?
You're right.
I just sold out two forums. I just sold out Dubai. I just sold out Philippines. I just sold out New York. What are you talking about? Like, the world gets it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, the world gets it. Why the f*** are we waiting on Omaha?
Don't move. We got more with Joe Coy. When we come back, it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We're still kicking in with comedian Joe Coy. Yee.
The things that you passed on are just as important as the things that you agreed to do. Because there's sometimes in life, there might be a great opportunity.
Yeah.
And you have to really think about it and say,
okay, maybe I shouldn't do this right now at this point in my career. Actually, yeah. might be more hurtful than helpful. So yeah. can you talk about that a little bit?
Are you talking about Chelsea or?
I mean, not just Chelsea, but.
Well, yeah, I wrote about Chelsea when I passed on her sidekick. You know what I mean? Right. And I was working at Nordstrom Rack selling shoes.
She wanted you to be Chewy?
Basically, I was supposed to be her sidekick. And we went all the way through, you know what I mean? Until like, you know, just moments before. And I gave her that call. This is why I love Chelsea, man. She's amazing. I should have recorded the phone call. But I just told her, I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to be known for me. Like, I don't want to do a show where I'm the sidekick or I want to be Joe Coy. But I love your show, but I feel like I need to pursue this. And man, I'm telling you, she cursed me. I wish she was on the phone right now.
I thought it was a positive thing. Like, no, do your thing. So she cursed you.
I'll tell you, you can bleep everything out. She was like, you're never going to get anywhere, Joe. Keep listening to these fucking agents. You don't know a good thing when it fucking hits you in the ass. Like, she was laying into me. Good luck. This show's going to be a hit. You go fuck yourself. No, Chelsea, I'm sorry. No. Worst decision ever. Watch what happens, Joe. Worst fucking decision. And then just hangs up on me.
You could have been my little nugget, you fucking face. But you decided you didn't want to be my little nugget.
Yeah.
But it says a lot about her that she still let you be a regular.
Yeah, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. That's why she's the best. Mm-hmm. She knew what that panel wanted. She knew what that panel was all about. She knew that she had to, like, that panel was a unit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she needed all the pieces. Yeah, Chelsea was the face and the voice and you know what I mean? But she also knew that it took the three other people on that panel for that show to just blow up. And that's why she's amazing. Right. She recognized that. Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
Did y'all get
by the way, she, oh, by the way, she was 100% right when she hung up the phone because the show took off and I was working at Nordstrom Rack and my ex-wife at the time picked me up at Nordstrom Rack. And as we're driving home, she goes, do you know Chelsea Handler? And I go, why? And she's like, her show's hysterical. And I was just like, me.
Damn it.
Joe, but I don't remember. When I think of Chelsea Handler's show, I think of you. I think of you, Chewy, Brad, and Lonnie Love. I'm dead serious. Those are the four people I think about on the panel all the time.
Oh, man. I love you, man. That show was amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. She was like the modern day Johnny Carson. You remember the old rumor, like, well, not a rumor. It was a real thing. When Johnny Carson liked you, he called you over to the couch. And if he called you to the couch, you made it. You're gonna make it. That's what Chelsea was. If you killed on that panel, you made it. And here's another thing about Chelsea, a little inside. If you sucked on that panel, she would literally tell the booking guy in front of everybody, like she'd whisper, but basically be like, it's the last time. Swear.
Who did that happen to? Her. Do you remember that happened to?
She did it all the fucking time, man. Chelsea would do it all the time. Hilarious. Swear, it was the funniest thing. Every time there was someone new on the panel, I would just like, it would always be after the first break. And right when we went to commercial, she'd just call them over and be like, yeah, let's end that one. No more.
Wow. This is your weekend, right? Because you got a movie that you're supposed to be producing called Easter Sunday.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Are you producing it? I know you're going to be in it, but are you one of the producers too?
Yeah, I'm a producer. Steven Spielberg, Amblin.
Never heard of
Dan Lin. Yeah, he's small, independent director.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Dan Lin over at Rideback. Those are the guys. But, yeah, man, Steven, it's amazing. I can't believe what's happening. It's crazy, man.
You got
coming in
look.
Hot, by the way.
You said what?
Coming in hot, my Netflix special, the second one. That's the one Steven watched and called me in and asked for a movie idea, and I pitched Easter Sunday, and he fell in love with it. So
wow! So you already had the idea in your mind and everything.
Yeah, I already had the movie already sold to Dan Lin. Dan already was in on it, and it wasn't really moving. And then when Steve said he wanted to know anything, and I just pitched the same movie to him, and he was like, "Let's go."
Why Easter Sunday? What is it about Easter Sunday?
That's a huge holiday for Filipinos.
Really?
That's our day. Oh man, are you kidding me? That's our day. That's the day of talent shows. That's the day of food. That's the day of fights. That's
Why?
The day of everything. I don't know. Filipinos just, they love Easter Sunday, man. That's our day. So
nothing to do with Jesus.
Jesus is a close second. Like, yeah, like we'll get to him after the adobo, but he's in the room.
What I told you, I said Jesus headlines no holidays, Joe. There's not one holiday that Jesus is centered around that he headlines. Not Easter, not Christmas. Even when you think of Easter, you think of that goddamn bunny.
Yeah, the bunny
that lays eggs, which is not even possible. Christmas is Santa Claus, the Grinch, Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Santa Claus headlines no holidays, bro.
Yep. That's crazy. And it's his birthday.
I mean, Jesus headlines no holidays. That's crazy. Yeah.
What is that? What is that?
He needs a new PR person. That's what he needs.
He needs a new PR person. Mm-hmm.
You know what Jesus needs? And I'm not even trying to be funny. The same beard that Envy has. Imagine Jesus with that beard.
No, it won't look authentic. And we
just almost looks like the bottom half of a motorcycle helmet.
I was just gonna thank you for sending me all the clothes and stuff. Now I'm not thanking
Joe Coy. Be careful because Envy will end this interview. Thank you so much, Joe Coy, for
Envy. Joe Coy, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't you do that.
First, you got everybody calling us a liar. You're a liar. Everybody calls us, you're a liar. So.
And you're proving it with your beard. You're proving it by continuing to tell us that your beard is real.
Hey, Envy, just paint the rest of your neck. That way people believe you.
Shout out to Khaled. Shout out to Kevin Hart.
Just take that ruler and then go down here.
You might as well. You might as well.
I hate y'all, man. Well, Joe Coy, thank you for joining us, man.
No, man, you are. I didn't like this, man.
Now, listen, Joe Coy, I got to say, and I told you this too, there's some really random-ass funny moments in this book, and one of my favorites is that you were part of a crew called the Scarecrows.
It was just the nerdiest crew, man.
What the hell?
It was just four nerds in elementary school, man. We were the Scarecrows. Just nerds.
I like that picture in the book too, where you look so innocent with the glasses from high school.
Yeah,
I can see why you would call yourself a scarecrow.
Right.
Yo, man, why are you talking like you were fucking handsome? Like why?
Yeah, you're old school. You're not much better. Hey, Charlamagne. I don't know if you've seen Envy's either, but between the two of them,
mine's a little crazy. Mine's a little crazy too.
Yeah, Charlamagne's acting like he was Michael B. Jordan in high school. You weren't.
I'd have definitely been in the Scarecrow crew. I would have definitely been in the Scarecrow crew earlier too.
I wonder if Michael B. Jordan was Michael B. Jordan in high school.
Yes, Michael B. Jordan was always Michael B. Jordan.
You think?
Yes, no. He's one of those guys that everyone thought he was hot.
I don't think so.
According to L'Oreal, she went to high school with him, and she said they used to make fun of him in high school.
See?
No one, man, she is a liar. Who is this? Who is this? No one liked her. No one liked her. Who is this? What's her name, Angela? What's her name?
I'm not going to say.
Say her name.
Because his name is Michael Jordan. She said, so that was already tough, like to be named Michael Jordan.
What's that got to do with looks? Your friend L'Oreal is a liar. You need to stop hanging out with liars, Angela. Anyone that says Michael B. Jordan wasn't good looking like 10 years ago, that's a lying bitch right there. You are a liar.
Listen, tweet us. I want to see old Michael B. Jordan high school pictures. Tweet us, Breakfast Club AM, or tweet Joe Coy. Show us Michael B. Jordan high school pictures. We can figure this out quite easily.
Absolutely.
Oh, very fast. Oh, and also tweet L'Oreal's last name, because she's a liar.
L'Oreal's going
to get you, bro. She does radio in D.C. L'Oreal, don't bite her tongue.
Oh God! Don't listen to her. Don't listen to her show, DC. That whole show is a lie.
Oh my goodness, man. Listen, go get Mixed Plate Chronicles of an All American Combo. All right, Joe Coy's autobiography. It's a great read. It's fantastic.
You didn't even read it.
Hey, Charlamagne. I got a new nickname for you. You want to know what it is?
What is it?
L'Oreal. You fucking liar. That's Charlamagne's new nickname. I want everyone to hashtag L'Oreal, a.k.a. Charlamagne.
I love L'Oreal.
Oh, man. Joe Coy, goodbye, man. We love you.
I love you guys.
We love you back.
The Breakfast Club. Your mornings will never be the same.
Hey, what up, y'all? It's DJ Envy. The General Insurance understands that no one's perfect and we could all use a break every now and then. The General works with you to keep you covered and will always treat you with respect. Call 800-GENERAL or go to thegeneral.com. Some restrictions apply. Now, Charlamagne, you got a positive note?
I do. Listen, the positive note is simply this. If we don't change, we don't grow. If we don't grow, we aren't really living.
Breakfast Club, bitches!
Y'all finished or y'all done?
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall.
Then trek through the thick jungle.
Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.